Coffee Mess. Celebrate your magic in the middle of life's messes. Hot, happy
mess.
I'm Zuri Hall, and this is Hot, happy mess.
Oh, shoot.
Happy Monday, y'all. If you're listening on the day that this episode comes out, if not, what are you doing? You should make sure you're subscribed and listening on the day these things come out. Maybe this is a Sunday, which would be even better. A wonderful way to celebrate the Sabbath, because I'm super excited about today's episode. We are talking about all things faith. Oh, by the way, this is Hot Happy Mess and I'm Zuri Hall. I kind of assumed you knew, but just in case you didn't, I'm your host and I'm happy you're here. Today, we're talking about all things faith and how we as millennial women can find our rhythm in our faith. Maybe if we fell off the wagon, how we can get it back. If we've never thought about it, how to start that journey. And we're also talking about losing faith, about losing religion, about the stigmas associated with church and how to kind of bounce back from those. I have an amazing woman. Oh my gosh, she's just an absolute light. Reverend Michelle Guidry. She's the Dean of Spelman College, and she is here to share her amazing insights on how we can all be more connected with our faith. And it was just such an honor to talk to her. My faith is important to me, and Lord knows I can use some guidance. And so if you're anything like me, if you need some positivity, some words of encouragement today, if you need those friendly reminders to stay strong in your faith or strengthen it, then this is an episode you're going to love. Even if you're curious, maybe you don't know if it's for you, you're on the fence, then you'll enjoy this conversation. I feel confident of that. You know, Michelle is awesome. She's so open and conversational and just non-judgmental and just cool, man. I just felt like I was talking to one of my homegirls. So it was really awesome to meet her and have this conversation. So without further ado, here's Michelle. All right, y'all. Reverend Dr. Michelle R. Guidry currently serves as the Dean of the Chapel and the Director of the Wisdom Center at Spelman College in Atlanta, Georgia. She is the creator of She Preaches, which is a virtual community and professional development organization that aspires to uplift African-American millennial women in ministry through theological reflection, fellowship, and liturgical curation. How are you? Should I call you Reverend? Reverend Doctor?
You can call me Michelle.
Michelle,
very well, Zuri. Thanks for having me on your show.
Of course, of course. You know, we were talking just a little bit before we got rolling here, and I was telling you how this is such an important conversation for so many, you know, whether we're finding faith, whether we've lost it, whether we're considering or discovering or exploring it for the first time in our lives. It's something that is important to so many of us. And just like all of the things that are important to us, it's hard to balance sometimes with everything that we as millennial women have going on. So I'm so grateful for you sharing your wisdom and your knowledge. To kick things off, just tell me a little bit about your journey to becoming the Dean of Spelman Chapel. That's huge.
It is huge. And I'm reminded every day what a big job it is. I'm really grateful to be in the position, and it has definitely been a journey. It started in my childhood. I was reared in a home with two parents that were both very spiritual and very active in two different church communities. My dad's a lifelong Catholic. My mom is a lifelong Baptist. And so it was just a really interesting childhood, kind of experiencing many, many different ways that Black people express their religious devotion to God. I became a follower of Christ in a Pentecostal by practice, non-denominational church, which was very pivotal in my journey, because after all those years of attending all those churches and all those years of being a granddaughter of a Baptist pastor, I had never seen a woman in ministry, Zuri. I'd never seen a woman wearing vestments and lipstick and heels in the pulpit, and just such a force, such a force. Yeah. Whenever Pastor C is what we would call her in church, Reverend Dr. Claudette Copeland, whenever she'd step to the pulpit, it's like she commanded the room even before she ever opened her mouth. And I remember feeling just so impacted by seeing this woman in such a powerful position.
You know, well, I can tell. I just got to chime in because y'all can't see her. But just so you know, Nichelle is all the way fly. She's got the beautiful big girl hoops. She's got the floral blouse. She's stunning. So I'm like, sign me up.
Y'all said to be camera ready. So I said, I can do that.
I am here for it. I am here for it. So that was your first example of a woman really owning it.
Just totally owning it. And what she has symbolized to me from that point all the way up into the present is, as a Black woman who does ministry, we have to bring our fullness to everything that we do. Bring your style, bring your fashion, bring your sensibility, bring your power, you know, like don't dumb it down. Don't hide it. Don't make it accessible and approachable so people aren't intimidated by you. No, no, no. Bring all of it because God gave it to you and it's your weapon in this world, right?
Wow. So true.
And so that was a turning point. When I got to college, I went to Clark Atlanta University, right next door to Spelman. I'm an AUC baby. At the time, Clark Atlanta had this requirement that you had to take one course in religious studies to graduate. And so I took this course called Psychology of Religion. And it was fascinating. The professor kind of trailed from the transatlantic slave trade in the Middle Passage all the way up to the Black church, as we have known it. He's trailed how religion has helped us to survive. And I was fascinated by it because I think, as a child, always being in church, obviously I saw people love going to church. They love hearing sermons and singing songs. But outside of that historical context of slave trading and auction blocking and family separation and enslavement and Jim Crow and Reconstruction, like it does feel like it can be performative. But in the context of Black history, Black faith is actually quite radical. And so powerful in all of the expressions. Yeah. And so once I took that class, Suri, I think my destiny Game was over. Secure. I was fascinated. And I think I was always very, my religion and my spirituality were very important to me. So now to be able to couple that with this intellectual approach, with this cerebral approach and having an actual, knowing the canon of Black theology, learning that, it took it to another level for me at that point.
Really?
Totally.
So at that, you were in college when you had that sort of epiphany, like, wow, this is it. This is the road that I want to take. Yeah. So what were the next steps? Where did you begin your theological studies rather? And what was that process like? I sometimes hear about leaders in communities of faith who say, those were some of my hardest times or some of the times that I struggled most with my faith when I was trying to find it in a more substantial way to help others. Struggle with that at all? Did you have those moments of doubt or question? And how did you get back on track or deepen your faith?
I definitely think that there is a certain layer when someone decides to answer the call to do ministry. There's a certain layer to leadership to where you cannot possibly preach a gospel or a message that you have not lived. And so there is to me, and I know this from my life, there are just seasons of hardship and that really just test your faith, because there's going to come a point when you're going to have to preach a message or you're going to have to counsel somebody, and you can't say a message. You can't proclaim a message with authority, with certainty, if you haven't lived it yourself. And so there were lots of seasons, many seasons. So after I graduated, I went to Yale Divinity School.
Wow.
And did the Master of Divinity there.
Okay, Ivy Lee.
Listen, we do HBCU, we do Ivy,
listen,
we do it all.
Okay. I'm here for it.
And that was an incredible experience. And I think it was that point that really activated me and politicized my faith. I became a womanist at Yale University, not because I wasn't exposed to it in undergrad, because I was, but because I saw And I felt and I experienced the daily, I would just say, onslaught of white supremacy and the ways that it does cause Black folks to walk into a room and wonder if you belong there. And it's tempting sometimes to code switch so you're not, you know, the oddball out in the room, and just to be able, again, to walk in your fullness and your authenticity no matter where you are. As a Black person in the United States, it is courageous, it is bold, it is radical. And that's where that switch happened for me in divinity school at Yale University. By virtue of my studies, by virtue of my experiences, such as the time that they hosted a watermelon eating contest at the community dinner on Friday night. And I was just like, this cannot literally be happening.
I gotta go.
Like, is this really happening? And, you know, at the time, I was the president of the Yale Black Seminarians, co-president of the Yale Black Seminarians, girl. And we called the school out.
It was
one of my first experiences of activism. Like, no, y'all need to make this right. So
did we make it right? They tried.
I wish you could see my face right now.
I really wish everybody else could, because you hit it with the little behind the ear scratch, and so you already know how that played out.
You know, at some point, you know, you have to just decide, like, am I going to die on this cross, or am I going to keep on living because it's more important to get my work done and fulfill my assignment? Amen. And, you know, that was one of those cases. I was like, I'm a raise my voice. And we organized and we did a whole thing. But in the end, it was just like, I'm trying to graduate.
Just get out.
And I do think it was important that we made our point, you know, but there comes a point where it's kind of like, okay, make your point, move on. So after Yale, I went and did my PhD at Garrett Theological Seminary in Chicago on the campus of Northwestern. And became even more politicized because I, at this time, was working at a church in Chicago, and I was also traveling a lot doing ministry. And I experienced a lot of what we would describe as like gender-based, you know, micro and macro aggression in church settings. And none of it that I thought was unique to me, because, you know, studying religion and studying the Black church, we know most of the Black church has been established on the backs and due to the labor of Black women, even when these contexts and settings don't know how to honor Black women, right? And so that was
When you say micro and macro aggression, sorry to cut you off, I'd love just a little more detail. Do you have like an example or two of what a micro or macro aggression might look like in the church space for a woman?
So it would range from like people saying, you're too pretty to be a preacher. I've never seen a preacher that looks like you. Having my attire policed, you shouldn't wear that. It's a little too concealing. It's a little too tight. And I'm like, it's skinny jeans. Listen, like, what do you want me to wear?
That's skinny jeans. Well, the good news is they've gone out of style, apparently.
Thank God.
I'm refusing to burn them, but I haven't worn them in a few weeks now because all the Gen Zers are making me feel bad.
No, it's cool. I mean, boyfriend jeans are a wave. I'm much more so comfortable. But, you know, all dresses and, you know, it was just very much things like that. And then, I mean, and then it got like to the extreme of like being invited to, I'll give you a specific example, being invited to preach at a church out of town. Okay. And instead of sending someone to the airport to pick me up, the pastor himself came and told me, before I drop you at your hotel, I've made us dinner reservations. We'd like to get to know you.
Oh my God.
And I was like, turn the car around immediately.
Sir.
Turn the car around immediately.
Oh my goodness.
And so there's just like all kinds of ways that, you know, without invitation, without prompting, people were just kind of would regularly just transgress my boundaries, which is a big part of the reason why She Preaches evolved, because I was like, I need some community around these experiences and these issues. And ultimately, I wrote my dissertation on rape culture in the Black church because I was very, very, I just knew like this is not unique to me. There is a historical legacy of misogynoir in the Black church, even as the Black church has benefited from the time, talent, and treasure of Black women.
Like so many people, across the spectrum. You brought up She Preaches. Was it around the time that you were in Chicago that that community formed, that virtual community?
Yeah, that formed in 2012. And at that time, I had been in Chicago for about a year. And I had a mentor at the church I was working at who was just so phenomenal, Zuri, an older woman who was just like my patron saint. You know, she took me under her wing. Everything she knew, she taught me. I think that relationship was like one of the biggest gifts I got from that season because she was the one that told me, you need girlfriends in this ministry life. Like you need people who know the struggle, who are also going through it, so y'all can glean wisdom and strength from each other. She was a big part of the inspiration for that.
Oh, that's amazing. So you're in school, you've developed this virtual community, you're stepping deeper into your faith and also working in this space now. At this point, how many years would you say you've been practicing? The only word I know is practicing for it, right? And you're technically a doctor, but what would you call it?
I think practice is a great word. I mean, because I have not mastered ministry yet. And I think, every round is going higher and higher. And I feel like I'm still practicing. I'm still getting better at it. I'm still learning. So, I think that's a perfect word.
Okay. And by no means when I say practice, did I mean still working on it?
Absolutely no. But I have actually really embraced this notion of practicing my faith and practicing my profession. So I think it's quite divine that you use that language because that's what I'm approaching my work as. I think sometimes when we approach our work from this kind of perspective of I'm the expert, it can project some pressure that's unhealthy for us as Black women. And I can practice my craft at the same time as knowing I'm a boss at it, right? Mm-hmm. So these don't negate each other. I'm just wanting to stay in the mode of continuing to sharpen my tools, continuing to sharpen my skill set, continuing to get better. And I think practice is a perfect framework for that.
Got it. Okay. All right. Practice it is. For those of us practicing our faith these days, what have you found to be the biggest challenges, hurdles, and also the biggest sources of encouragement, specifically for women like us, for millennial women of color who are trying to find or keep faith? How different is it now from, generations back? I grew up in the church. I grew up in the AME church. I kind of found my way back to Christianity in a way that really made sense for me in a meaningful way, not just I went to church every Sunday way. I lived it. Yeah. I experienced it. I chose it as a young adult. Yeah. And that really moved the needle in a different way. What have you seen of millennial women and their experiences in finding faith in their adulthood?
I think you hit the nail on the head in saying, I chose this. I think we are all in a season of our lives as millennials, whether you are on the front end or you're a geriatric millennial like me.
Oh gosh, I hate everyone. Why did they come up with that? Who did that to y'all? I'm not far behind you.
To make us older. Wait,
what's the age that folks become geriatric? Because for a minute I thought I was too. I'm 33, so I think I'm just peak millennial.
I think it's like whoever would be like between 34 and 35 now. You're at the start of geriatric millennials. I might be wrong, but I know I fall into the category as a 36-year-old woman.
Wear it proudly.
I mean, I would not go back to my 20s if somebody paid me. It only gets better with time. And so, hallelujah, 36 and counting.
Let's go.
Let's go. I mean, and so I think, you know, honestly, this is kind of a huge, well, I'll answer the question in the order you asked me. So some of the big hindrances and challenges to finding balance, spiritual balance. One of the first things that comes to my mind is burnout and exhaustion. And you and I were talking about that briefly before we got started, but it's just so real. And it's this really unique conflation of the superwoman syndrome, feeling like we have to do everything. And even sometimes like we do have to do a lot of things because we don't have the resources to delegate or hire out. We don't have the team. We don't have the framework. Sometimes we also just overextend ourselves. I think we overcommit, we overfunction. Some of us are still in the process of claiming our no. And I think all of these things and more together, it is so easy to end up so exhausted. I'm tired often. And I find that in the times where I feel most fatigued and I feel most exhausted, it's when I've taken on too much. I've taken on too much. I haven't managed my time. I haven't been a good steward of my health, you know, my physical and mental wellness. And everything is all of my intentionality and mindfulness is falling to the side because there's just 1,001 things to do. So I just think we've got to, you know, and a lot of people don't consider this spiritual work, but it is complete spiritual work when you think about how you are the steward and the agent over your time. And the steward and the agent over your body, right? And it becomes a matter of discernment, like what's necessary today? What is calling me today? What is the work that is mine to do today? And not anybody else's, and not tomorrow's work, and not next week's work, but today's work, right?
Right.
And that's actually a part of my morning devotional. Like, God, if there's something on the plate today that doesn't have to happen, let it fall off. If there's something that requires my attention today, God, draw my heart to it and let me get it done. Give me the fortitude to finish. And Lord, if there's anywhere where I can ask for help, God, send the resources, send the help that I need, because I'm only one person.
When we're struggling with discernment, when we're struggling with the burnout, figuring out what to prioritize, and I was going to ask, you know, what resources or tools do you have or use or suggest? And I still would love to know, but the fact that even in your prayer life, right, that just praying for that discernment, for that power of delegation and help with prioritizing is in and of itself doing some of the work and tapping into your spirituality to help figure out what's most important.
Period. I mean, I cannot overstate the importance of having a spiritual life. I think a lot of us, and you described your spiritual path, which it resonates a lot with me. Like there was a crossroads in my life too, where I was like, well, what's true for me?
Right.
I've been raised in this, you know, whole thing. And even, you know, went to divinity school. I know all this stuff, but what feels most true for me and what felt most true in a season of great hardship in my life was not going to church, was not, you know, having this really traditional practice, but in the quiet and in the solitude of my own home, getting really personal and really vulnerable with God in prayer was very critical to my survival, my healing, and my thriving. Yeah. And I have found that when I take the time for prayer, everything changes.
You made me tear up over here.
Oh my God.
It's so true. It's so true.
Everything changes. And I don't, by prayer, Zuri, I don't want anybody to misunderstand me and hear me as saying, like, you've got to give all this lip service to God and pray for 30 minutes at 6 a.m. If that's not your thing, it's not your thing. If your thing is, you know, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to light this candle and I'm going to have 10 minutes of saying, you know, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. God makes me lie down in green pastures. That is your prayer life. If your prayer life is, I'm just going to sit in silence and just allow the Spirit to speak to me, like that's your prayer life. You know, it's really about communicating with God, however it feels most true and most authentic for you. But having that synergy, having that spiritual connection is, to me, what I would recommend as the top resource for spiritual self-care.
I love that. And it's so much simpler than we think, right? Because you're right. Like, to your point, I'm not the 6 a.m. anything person, actually. I don't want to do anything.
And I never have been.
Yeah. But it's comforting to know, like, we can take the pressure off, right? Of like, what makes a good Christian or a good person of faith, or what the prayers have to feel like or look like, as long as it resonates with you and you're in that communion with God. Definitely. So be it, whatever that looks like and whatever feels like for you. Like,
whatever that looks like, you know? And so my prayer life ranges from, I mean, I have, you know, typical prayer where, you know, I might raise my hands in the morning to express my gratitude. I might kneel up by my bed at night because I did that as a child. I have seasons where I'm listening to Gregorian chanting, and I have seasons where I'm listening to Taizé from France. I have seasons where I'm listening to the African American spirituals, because all of it is prayer. When you just attune your mind and your wavelengths to a higher wavelength, and it's prayer, and it makes all the difference.
In addition to prayer, what are some of the things that we should be thinking about, or that you seriously recommend, strongly suggest we be doing on a weekly or a monthly basis? You know, particularly once the pandemic hit, things really changed when it came to going to church, right? We realized, okay, well, we can't do this in the way that we used to. Virtual communities became stronger than ever, live streaming of services and sermons. How important is that to you for the women you lead at Spelman and beyond when you're encouraging them to strengthen their faith?
Oh, it's so important. It's so important. And I'll say that one of the reasons why, like kind of tapping into digital resources is so important for Black women in particular, and I've told this to my students, it's because the pandemic hit, right? And everybody went virtual. But for years before that happened, Black women were doing virtual ministry. And we were doing it by virtue of necessity. We weren't getting the same opportunities. We didn't have the same sort of platforms. And so many of us, you know, we retreated to online and virtual options to actually live out our calling. Hence, she preaches, right? But then there's Dr. Melva Sampson, who does Pink Robe Chronicles on Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. and gets me together before I have to go to campus.
I'm into it just from the name alone. So I'm going to have to check this out.
This woman is everything.
Okay, Pink Robe Chronicles.
Danielle Thomas, who does Unfit Christian, where, I mean, she's doing some really, really, really amazing work of kind of bringing, you know, those who were raised in Black church into communion with African-based spirituality. She's doing a lot of truth-telling. Mm. She's doing a lot of undoing and unlearning. I follow her religiously. She's one of my spiritual guides. And Trisha Hersey is actually an amazing resource, or has created an amazing resource called the NAP Ministry.
NAP?
Yes, girl.
Okay. What is NAP? I'm assuming it's an abbreviation.
No.
Okay.
It is not. It is not.
Wait.
So
do we get to NAP?
Her whole ministry. There's a ton of people right now talking about the importance of rest and rest being resistance. And now, like, white wellness practitioners are saying rest is rebellion. But I think all those people need to send Trisha Hersey an offering, because she was the first woman to say rest is resistance to white supremacy. When Black folks lay down and rest their bodies, take these naps, and all the different ways that rest can happen, it is resistance to this white supremacist capitalist machine that we live in. And that, and a Black woman started that.
Talk about it. Yes.
So the NAP ministry started out, I believe, virtual, but she also was She started this ministry when she was in divinity school and was actually creating installations and community programs where people would just come and take naps.
Really? Hold on. What are the qualifications? How do I sign up?
I've been following her for so long because I'm like, I'm waiting for her to start these programs back again. Yes, because, yes. You know, she has really raised my consciousness around how important it is to rest, the spirituality of Sabbath, and just unplugging, and also helped me to see, you know, that this whole grind culture, this whole impulse to just work so you can look busy and work so people yes. respect you and work so you can produce and da 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 da, you know, how closely tied to white supremacy that is. And I'm like, but we love it. And she helped to bring that into light for me. And Only Love Alston is also a Black woman who actually, she's Jewish, and she has an online ministry called Prophetic Whirlwind, where she is reclaiming the Black history of Judaism and teaching people Black folks basically how to reclaim like Old Testament Hebrew scriptures through African practices and community. And she's also, every week, she's very big on her Sabbath, and she expresses the spiritual significance of unplugging and resetting. So I just lift these women and their ministries up as resources because they've helped me to make it over, but also because they've been doing this. They've been doing this long before 2020. Mm-hmm. We've been out here. We ain't new to this. We true to this. And when you need some resources, all you have to do is tap in.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing so many resources. I mean, so gracious with that extension of knowledge and wisdom. I want you to talk about She Preaches Too now. Like, what? Tell us a little bit about the organization, the community that you've built, and who is that for? Who can engage? Who can be a part of that community?
Yeah, so She Preaches, I started it in 2012, and it was for millennial Black women in ministry. We would do, at the time, Zoom really wasn't a thing, so we would do these free conference call gatherings and seminars and all kinds of really cool kind of activations that we would do to bring people together over space and time. What became sort of our signature offer, if you will, was our Good Friday services, because in the Black church, you go to a Good Friday service, and many of them are, it's all men preaching seven times, seven men back to back, the seven last words. And in 2014, we did our first one, seven Black young women preaching.
Wow.
And that's amazing. We preached on the women in the Bible. We preached on lived experiences that were unique to women. So we had, you know, we had people preaching about menstruation and menopause and sexual assault and depression and, you know, these sort of ways that we as Black women uniquely suffer, and proclaiming the gospel through that lens. She Preaches has not been as active since I moved to Atlanta, which to anyone who has started anything, my one word of advice is start with a team, even if it's just two of you, because when you get tired, the work has to continue. And it's like one of the biggest things that I regret about like my lack of infrastructure with She Preaches, as I've sat with it, had a chance to reflect on my leadership.
Who is your most favorite female biblical figure? And why?
I would say this woman whose name is Deborah.
Okay.
You can read all about Deborah in the book of Judges. Deborah was the first known woman judge in Judah, right? In the ancient Hebrew community. The first female judge, which would have probably been the equivalent of something like a president, right? of the nation, right? First known woman in this powerful position. And when we first meet Deborah in the scriptures, it said that she ruled from beneath a palm tree, right? And so this powerful woman in this luxurious, I've always just pictured her under this palm tree is like, here's my throne and all of my administration. And I'm just going to be under this palm tree receiving the wisdom from heaven.
Yes.
But then there comes a pivot in her story when the people are going to war, and they're in a very vulnerable situation. And God has specifically called one person to go to battle for her people, for the people. And this person's name was Barak. But Barak turns around and said, "I'll only go if you go with me," to Deborah.
To Deborah. Okay.
Deborah says, "I will go with you, but because of this decision that you have made, God will not give the victory to you in the battle, but God will give it to a woman."
Ooh.
And in that moment, you wonder, like, is she going to get the victory? Like, is she going to slay the enemy? So, but you got to keep reading this powerful pivot point. And I love it because I feel like I can see her moving out from under her palm tree with her beautiful clothing and her powerful seat and going to put on her battle gear and going into battle for her people to secure the safety and the dignity of her community. And this woman goes to war. This judge, this leader, this powerful woman decides, for this moment, I am leaving my seat of power behind, and I'm getting right in the battle with my people.
Wow.
And so she goes to battle, and at the end, it is not Deborah who secures the victory. It's another woman who we meet named Jael, who slays the enemy by basically running, like stabbing him in the head.
Okay.
And so the things that I love about Deborah was her position. I love that she got out of her powerful seat to go into battle to secure the victory for her people. But I also love she set up another woman to succeed. Mm. She set up another woman to have the victory and to secure the victory for the people. Because I think when you're a powerful woman, you understand that I don't have to consolidate the power. I can share it.
Amen.
And so that's my girl, Deborah.
Oh, I love that. I've got to go back and find that story. Where in the Bible would we find that?
She's in Judges.
Judges, okay.
She's in the book of Judges. In Judges 4, we meet Deborah. Judges 4, we meet her. And then you read, I think, 4, 5, and 6, you read her story.
Okay. I love that. Okay. Well, I'm excited now to go to Judges and revisit. Yeah. Honestly, maybe for the first time, because I'll be honest, I don't think I'd ever known the story of Deborah, but that is certainly a fascinating one. And your points to her setting up another woman to take that glory, to take that celebration, that win. Wow. Okay. That's a fun one. That was a surprise. Okay. I want to know your favorite scripture. Just bless us just really quickly, a little something. And why is that one your go-to?
My favorite scripture is in Luke chapter 1, where Mary sings a song of praise to God. She talks about the mighty one has done great things for me, and holy is his name. And her whole song is talking about how through generations of her people, God has been working to bring the Messiah into the world and has chosen her to be the vessel to do that. And she's not even like seeing herself as the tipping point. She's just seeing this as being the next chapter of God's faithfulness to the people. And she's praising God. In the academy, we call her song the Magnificat because she is magnifying God. And praising him. And so I always turn to that, even when I feel like, man, things could be better right now, or I'm in a hard spot, because it reminds me that it's not over yet. If it took God that long to manifest that promise, then I'm just in a process now of waiting for mine to come.
Wow, so beautiful, so beautiful. Thank you. Nichelle, for people who maybe didn't grow up in the church, maybe are new to this concept of faith or on the fence about exploring it, where do you suggest they start? What book could be read? What website could be visited? What internal dialogue or reflection could be had?
Yeah. In addition to all of those women that I just named, because I would say they're just all wonderful entry points into a radical faith. All of these women, there's nothing traditional about anything that they do. And so I just think right now, if you're going to jump in for the first time, jump in at the deep end, you know, just dive right in. Some other books that I think are really important. Couple of things, Howard Thurman is one of my favorite Christian writers, and he's actually one of my predecessors in the chapel at Spelman. He's the former okay. campus pastor at Spelman before he worked at Morehouse and then Boston College. He wrote this book called Jesus and the Disinherited. And this book is so important to me because it was the first time that I read Zuri, the ways that the Gospels and Jesus, as he's presented in the Gospels, comes to bear on social justice issues. And there's so much happening in the world, and there's a call right now for us to see the ways that faith emboldens us to be agents of justice and equity. And Howard Thurman's book, Jesus and the Disinherited, is just so powerful in that way. He also wrote a book called The Inward Journey, where he's talking about having an interior life and a spiritual life and practices of stillness and reflection and centering, which is very different from what we are doing right now, where everything is just so quick to be broadcasted. And so what he's doing in this work is just so important for doing that kind of spiritual grounding and centering work that we were talking about earlier. And finally, there's a beautiful book that I'm actually teaching right now at Spelman called In My Grandmother's House.
Okay.
Black Women, Faith, and the Stories We Inherit is written by Dr. Yolanda Pierce, who is the current dean of Howard University School of Divinity. And she's written this beautiful, beautiful book where she's basically reflecting on the faith that she inherited as a young Black woman who was steeped in the Black church tradition, who also went through a formal theological education and what that meant to what she inherited in this process of owning her faith and owning it in such a way that she's not discarding what she was raised with, but she's fine tuning it. She's bringing it with her in the ways that feel right as an act of honor for the women who poured it into her.
Okay.
Just beautiful. Oh my God. And she does a lot of historical work in there. She will introduce you to some really powerful historical figures and movements. And it's almost like the best of both worlds. And so far, my students are loving this book this semester.
Really?
And okay. I'm loving it too.
All right. Okay. I'm going to have to pick that up too. Thank you for those. You talked about it in that last bit. So kind of a perfect segue, my grandmother's house, right? We think about generations and legacy and a lot of us growing up in the church. I do want to use that to sort of transition to one thing that some of us have experienced, stigmas around what is right, what is wrong, what we do, what we don't do. Some people, unfortunately being turned off to God because they're sort of bundling God up with religion or church or that specific experience. I'd love if you could just speak to that, to kind of what you've historically seen and some of the stigmas in the church around the traditional stigmas, single motherhood, divorces, et cetera. How can women still feel connected and sort of rise above or forget about the people who want to cling to the stigma instead of make the space that we know should be made and is being made in so many places?
Yeah. This is such a big question, Zuri. Mm-hmm. And it's something that's weighed heavily on my heart as someone who's been divorced, as someone who, you know, has faced some consequences for my truth telling in the church. This is so real. And also that, so what I'll respond is what I have right now. I'm probably, okay. You know, in some years I'll live into a more evolved understanding, mm-hmm. but I think you should always go where you are loved, not where you are tolerated, not where you have, or you feel that you have to, you know, leave parts of yourself at the door. And only a part of you can enter in. You know, there's so much work and scholarship done around the sort of trauma that has been done by the Black church. But as somebody who practices in the Black church, what I know is that there's so many communities that are not wrapped up in that trope. There's so many life-giving communities. There's so many queer-affirming ministries. There's so many womanist-led ministries where they really do abide by the ethic of Jesus that says, come as you are, and we will love you as you are, right?
Yeah.
And in so doing, right, when we love you as you are and you come as you are, the expectation and the hope is that you'll come as you are, but you'll leave elevated. Like, you'll leave elevated, because many times we come into these healing settings broken. We come into these healing settings because of these stigmas and these traumas that we've suffered in the church. We come because we need to be loved up on, right?
Yeah.
And love heals, right?
Yes.
And when you're healed, you can move differently in the world. When you're healed, you can walk with your head up. When you're healed, you can actualize your calling. So these are communities who will push you to be the best that you can be. And you might not find those in a local setting. You might have to log on to them, which is why I attend Pink Road Chronicles right before I go do my thing in Sisters Chapel on Sundays, because that's the community that pours into me. That's the pastor that I subscribe to, her leadership.
I love it. Okay.
So go where you're loved, not where you're tolerated.
Absolutely. I'm going to just snap a few times for that one, because I have tried to stay in some spaces where I'm just like, why am I even here? And I'm not even talking in a, you know, necessarily a religious context. It's like,
yes.
So used to being the outlier and just like normalizing being uncomfortable or being quiet for the sake of not causing a stir or being side-eyed. And it's like, I'm just gonna go. Like, you forget sometimes that you have that power and you can take it back.
And you can take it back. And for the places that have forced you to silence yourself, there's a community that's going to call you to speak your truth and walk in your authenticity. You might have to go looking for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you'll find the search will be worth it.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Before I let you go, Nichelle, obviously you have this beautiful, this amazing, this powerful and important role at Spelman. You're advising so many young women as they walk in faith. If you could just leave us with maybe two, maybe three things that you would share with them, that you would share with us about finding our faith and nurturing it, what should we remember as we continue on or start our journeys?
Yeah. So the first thing that I'll say is just have a spiritual practice that you do with intentionality, whether it's prayer, whether it's holding silence, whether it's fasting, whether it's writing in your journal, whether it's reading your sacred text, have something that you do with consistency that will feed you spiritually. So that's number one. Number two, be very conscientious of the content that you consume. Be very, very, very discerning about who you follow and who and what appears on your feed, because all of it finds a way into your spirit, into your subconscious. And, you know, you can curate a feed that feeds you. You can curate a feed that nourishes your spirit, that brings you back to a place of center and focus. You may have to unfollow some toxic accounts. You may even have to unfollow some people that you know personally.
Listen, we've talked about that on the show, because I was like, oh, I just want to cut so many people loose. Mute them, y'all. If you feel like you can't unfollow them, mute them.
Then put them on mute. Use all of those modalities. Mute, unfollow, block even. You know?
Ooh, and block.
Michelle, I am a fan of the block button.
Ooh, okay? Savage mode.
Listen, no, we ain't having it. So be very conscientious of the content you consume and curate a feed that feeds you. And then finally, find ways to get your rest, because you cannot possibly function from a deficit. You cannot possibly function from a place of exhaustion. So finding the activities that replenish your energy, replenish your cup, that fill you up, do those with intention. And the one more thing I'll say is surround yourself with people who love you and think highly of you. People who don't make you feel like you are an inconvenience to them or a burden to them, but who make you feel like you are the queen, the king, the liege of the world, because you are.
Yeah. I love that. Oh my God. Such good stuff. So many amazing tips. I have so enjoyed this conversation.
Same.
And like I said at the start, I appreciate you sharing your wisdom with us. If people want to follow you so we can start feeding our spirits with our feeds, I love what you said about that. Where can people keep up with you, reach out to you, support you?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram mostly. That's my social media of choice. So I'm at Nichelle G, NeicheLleg. So I'm at Nichelle G. And then I'm also on my coffee page doing coffee stuff. So blackgirl.blackcoffee on Instagram. So those are my preferred platforms. And then you can go to my blog to read more and connect there as well.
I love it, Nichelle. Thank you so much for this conversation. I appreciate you.
I'm so excited. I can't wait to hear it. Thank you so much.
I'm happy. Yes. Ooh, all right. I am so invigorated, so energized after that conversation with Nichelle. Thank you again to her. And I can't wait to go get that coffee. Blackgirlblackcoffee.com. Let's go. My biggest takeaway from our conversation was really just being intentional, right? More intentional about setting time aside for my faith. I was journaling at my best, but that was a while ago, but I just get so exhausted with the journaling and the writing down. But I loved what she said about prayer life and prayer being so many different things to so many different people. I can light a candle. I can say my prayers. I can talk to God for 10 minutes a day. I'm big on just conversations in the car, like, he's in the passenger seat with me. So I just kind of speak out loud or to myself in a very conversational way and find that that's most often how I commune with God or how I have the conversations within myself when I'm trying to work through something spiritually. But I love that she, you know, really reminded us that celebration of faith comes in all different forms. So I hope you took something away from it. I certainly did. And the tools that Nichelle gave us will hopefully make a world of difference. So thank you again, Reverend Nichelle, for joining us on Hot Happy Mess. Hey, you listening, make sure you stay tuned for more episodes every Monday. You can head over to hothappymess.com and leave me a voice recording. That's fun and new, right? It could be a review. You could have a question for me and ask for an Ask Zuri segment or just to say what's up. And who knows, you might hear yourself on a future episode. And if you are loving what you're hearing, then go ahead and leave us a review because it helps. Okay. This one is from a lovely lady who sent me a beautiful message that I want to read, but I'll keep her identity private to protect her privacy. But she says, "Hi, Zuri. I really do want to thank you in private for creating Hot Happy Mess. I was forced into this journey and I'm so grateful for it. Your podcast was the first one I clicked on when I started this journey. It really has me out here thinking I can be great and more than just an accounts receivable specialist. Don't get me wrong. I am grateful for my job and all I have learned and the friends I have made because of it. But now I have realized that I can have a 760 credit score. I can go back to school. I can build my house one day very soon, and I can be financially whole. I didn't know any of this until Hot Happy Mess. Thank you again for sharing such a huge blessing to the women of color who need it the most, and definitely everyone in the world. I wish you nothing but the best." With a bunch of little pink heart emojis. Oh my gosh, that message warms my heart more than you know. And it is exactly why I created this show. It is my hope, my vision, my inspiration and motivation to just help shine a little light in your lives, because it's certainly helping to shine a lot in mine by talking with you all and getting to know you and learning with you, because I am learning just as much as y'all are as we have these conversations. So I'm so excited to hear that you are remembering what is possible for you, because there is so much possible. I really believe that. And I'm wishing you the best. I'm sending you so much light and love. And thank you. Thank you for taking the time to send such a beautiful message. Thank you. If you want to leave a review on iTunes, it's a free and super easy way to support Hot Happy Mess so we can keep growing and growing and growing. Just go to Apple Podcasts, type in Hot Happy Mess, scroll down and write your review and leave 5 stars. Thanks. Love you. Okay. Don't forget to share this episode with a friend. If you liked it, your homies on social, tag us at Hot Happy Mess so we can repost you if you're listening. And you can slide in my DMs, hit me up, follow me at Zuri Hall, Z-U-R-I-H-A-L-L, or at Hot Happy Mess on Instagram. And I will talk to you next Monday. Bye. Bye. Bye.